once again, Brain Drops, already episode 5, and yeah, I am off with the usual host, Leonard. Hey Leonard, how are you doing?
What's up, Dom? I'm great. How are you?
Well, I can't complain. I'm pretty good. Yeah, today we have another guest, and I think this is the first time that, you know, that you are in Würzburg, I'm in Göttingen, and last time Adam was sitting next to me, that's not the same anymore. We have Mike Stockton on the show, and Mike Stockton is still in France. Mike, how are you? Do you hear us?
I can hear you clear, boys. I'm doing well, and it's a pleasure to be on the show with you and Leonard.
It's great to have you here.
Yeah, it's an absolute honor, I have to admit. Yeah, I think I'll try to get the show on the road for us here. And, you know, Mike, I have to break the ice here a little bit because, you know, last episode, at the end of last episode, Adam was nominating you being the next guest on our show, and you immediately confirmed. Why is that? Why do you want to be on Brain Drops too?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of answers to this question, frankly. I can't ever turn down a good challenge, as Adam, friend, knows very well. And mentioned just to get a chance to talk with Dom and Leonard, who you know, I've had relationships with you guys for a few years each now, and I thought this would be so much fun to get to come on here, hang out with you guys a little bit, and talk a little smack in the meantime to both of you for old time's sake.
That's great to hear. For everybody who does not know where we know each other from, so we played on the same team in the season, I think it was 2017 and 18 for BG Göttingen. And Dom was, as he is still right now, strength and conditioning coach. So that's how we all got to meet up, for everybody who doesn't know.
Yeah, that's thanks for mentioning that, Leonard. I have to say, though, I mean, of course, you were on the team, but more, right?
Sorry, say that again?
You were more kind of a practice player, right? Did you?
Well, yeah, I was practice player and trying to keep the mood up, because our winning streak was pretty short most of the time. So, well, I was there for good. I don't know, how do you say?
Let me handle this, Leonard. You were there for positive vibes. Morale
exactly.
Was up, even though production was down for a fair amount of time.
And we'll definitely touch this topic later on. But maybe, Mike, start real quick to introduce yourself. I don't know, we already said it in the pre-talk. Tell the listeners some maybe important facts about you that they need to know.
As you know, my name is Michael Stockton, and I'm a professional basketball player. I've been doing this for 9 seasons now, and my first 4 years were all in Germany, 2 in Karlsruhe, and then 2 in the BBL with MHP Reason Ludwigsburg. Then I went to the NBA D League, then I went to Russia, then I went to Greece, and then I got to come back to my second home, Germany, in Göttingen, and that's where I obviously got to meet you guys, and now I'm in Cholet, France. And I spend, you know, my off seasons in Spokane, Washington, and Priest Lake, Idaho. And, you know, this is about the time of year where I start to get the feeling that it's time to get home again. So I'm happy to be on the show with you, but I wish I was out there water skiing at the moment.
Mike, well, I have to say again, happy to have you here. You know, I'm always trying, because, you know, I had the fortune working with you for 2 years in Göttingen, and for people who don't know you, like in regards to basketball, you seem to have an unlimited source of energy, whether when you play, when you're just practicing, when you're in the weight room. Also, you know, if back then, if we were losing or if we were winning, you know, your energy seemed to be unlimited. And I would just like to know where that comes from. You know, I can still remember you after our weightlifting sessions, that you were swinging from one pull-up bar to the other like Tarzan. Where does it, just let the listeners know, where does it come from? Is there like any special ingredient?
You know, first off, I take that as the ultimate compliment coming from you, Dom. So thank you. Where does it come from? There's obviously a few factors. And first off, you know, physically, I think genetics has a fair amount to do with it. I gotta give my mom and dad a lot of credit, both being athletes and both being relative hard asses. When I was a kid, we didn't just get to sit on the ground and play video games. We didn't have that. It was go outside and find something to do. And so, you know, I was always on the move. You know, as I've gotten older, I think it's come from a few things. You know, it's always being active. You know, I as soon as practice is done, it's not like I would just come home and sit on the couch. You know, I would go out for walks or a bike ride or try to find something else to do just because I enjoyed it. And, you know, for my 9 years professionally here, I've done a lot of cross training, you know, just things that aren't basketball or aren't necessarily sports related. Mm-hmm. And it's just always made it to where it seems like even if I feel like I'm relaxing, I'm actually doing something very active. And so I guess maybe I've just been able to sustain that for a long time. And the even more important part to that, I guess, is mental. When I was a kid, I distinctly remember this, my dad telling me when I was a kid, I don't know how old, but we were running after practice. We had all gotten in trouble and everybody started kind of dogging it on a suicide or a 16 or 17 or whatever the running, you know, soup du jour was of that time. And he just looked at all of us and said, "Are you guys serious?" He said, "There's something left in the tank. You can do anything for 2 minutes or whatever the running duration was. You always have something left in the tank." And I've taken that with me ever since then.
Yeah, I think that's crazy, because being with you in practice and being one of the other guys who definitely feels like I have nothing in the tank no more. I mean, literally nothing. And you just seeing you out there just acting like nothing happened. We didn't do suicides yet or whatever we did. I remember a couple of practices where the running did not stop for a longer period. And just looking over there and seeing you run, I was like, all right, I guess he's right. There's something left in the tank. So that was definitely something I always remembered and tried to take with me after playing with you. This energy you had, even though I'm not succeeding always, it's definitely something for athletes to look up for. But also what I found interesting in what you said is that it keeps going off the court. It's not like you're only like this in the gym while, let's say, you're getting paid for it. Also off the court, you really try to get into the European culture. You already said this is your second home, Germany, basically. And I think that's something I even admired more, let's say, that you always try to get into the culture and were curious about where you actually live right now. Maybe tell us a little bit more about that also, because I think that really describes you very well if people want to get to know you.
Absolutely, man. You know, coming over for my first year in Germany, I had never lived, obviously, overseas. I had been one time to Italy when I was in college, and I just remember being the consummate jerk of a tourist. You know what I mean? I'm in Italy, the land of phenomenal food. And I'm sitting here complaining that where's the spaghetti and meatballs? And God, you know, everyone says once they go to Italy, they can't go back and eat Olive Garden. Well, I would love Olive Garden right now. I was just being a jerk about the whole thing. And, you know, it's why people a lot of times have bad opinions on traveling Americans. You know, we do it to ourselves. So when I got to Germany, I distinctly remember telling myself, I went to McDonald's the first 2 days I was there, and I don't even like McDonald's. And I said to myself, this has got to stop. You know, I'm not going to live like this. It's time to start assimilating to the culture a little bit. Let's walk around. Let's find out about the city. You know, I want to know what people do. I want to know why this place is on the map. You know what I mean? What makes this place, you know, what makes Göttingen, for example. And so I just figured I might.
Excuse
as well
me, real
try
quick, Dom. Can you stop with that pen, real quick? Because that's on the on the show all the time. I'm really sorry to disturb you like this. I don't, maybe it's you, Mike, but somebody's clicking.
It's not me, man. Hey.
Then it's the other host. All right. Message received. Sorry. Keep going.
Oh no.
Sorry, Leonard.
All fine.
Sorry, Leonard. I'm terribly sorry.
Dom, I've got the floor here, man. This is my show. Okay, this is my 30 seconds of fame here, and you're ruining it with your pen clicking.
I don't have any words right now. I'm truly, madly, deeply sorry.
Hey, Leonard, you know, it's not Dom's fault that he ruined the my story and possibly the entire podcast, but we'll find a way to move on.
All right. Do you want to finish that story, or is it ruined now?
I'll shorten the story. All no, right. It's not ruined. Look, I didn't want to be the tourist that pretended that he didn't care about where he lived, and that me being, you know, an American was more important than trying to fit in. I wanted to come here and fit into everywhere I've played. I've attempted to learn languages and alphabets and eat things I would never eat in a million years. And you know, it's worked out well, and I'm glad that I've taken that mentality.
And I mean, we also almost recorded this podcast on German, right?
Exactly. You know, I'm just a few words away from being completely fluent. And, you know, I'm just doing this so my family can understand what I'm saying. This is the only reason we
exactly,
did this in English.
Exactly. Dom, you want to try to make up for your mistake with a good question?
I think I do have a good question. You know, I just want to bring that conversation back to, you know, basketball a little bit, if that's okay for you guys.
It's fine, buddy.
Well, Mike, you know, in Göttingen, you were used always to playing a lot of minutes. So you were the motor of the team for the 2 years you played here. So playing a lot of minutes obviously implies a lot of strain for the body. Yeah. In that regard, I would be really interesting to know, how do you usually take care of your body? I mean, there are so many options out there these days that supposedly speed up recovery. Things like, for example, cold tops, contrast showers, I don't know, you name it, saunas, compression gear, and obviously also sleep. Sleep has been something Leonard and me talked about in the last podcast a lot. My question now comes down to the, do you have like a special routine or anything that maybe helped you throughout the years taking better care of your body?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And you mentioned there's a million different ways to recover, right? And there's a million things that are the flavor of the month. And in Göttingen, they actually did a great job of having multiple things available to us, right? We had the cold tub, we had a sauna, had multiple physios that could do massage and whatnot.
Yeah.
And you know, physical therapy if we needed it. So having multiple things available has always been great because it's not always the same thing. But one thing that I would say that I've been doing all these years and that's helped me has been chiropractic work.
Yeah.
And it's not always going to see, you know, a chiropractor wherever you are, because that's not always easy to find.
Yeah.
And sometimes it just causes a lot of problems between, you know, medical staffs and whatnot. There's a lot of gray area in there that you don't want to cross the lines and make people upset. But something I do a fair amount, I do it at home, is, you know, let's call it muscle work and muscle testing, to where, you know, trying to find the source of the problems on your body. If you sprain your ankle, you know, how can you, instead of just doing, you know, what necessarily a trainer might say to you, and I'm not saying anybody specific, but, you know, the old adage is, okay, yeah, well, just stay off your feet, you know, ice it, stim, and elevate it and keep it compressed. You know what I mean? That can't get you back on the floor in a hurry. That's just going to take your time. So, you know, a little bit of that chiropractic work and you know, possible joint adjustments, whether it's an ankle adjustment, and then some muscle work to try and get the entire apparatus around your foot and ankle working, you know, firing again, getting your muscles firing again to make sure everything's balanced, to where instead of staying off your foot, every step you take is therapeutic because the muscles are in balance. And so that's something that I've done a lot, and that's something I learned, you know, from watching my dad play for a long time with the Jazz, is that he always had, you know, regular chiropractic work and work of that certain discipline. And so that's something I've tried to learn over the years and apply to myself. And I think it's helped.
Did I get that wrong? You do that stuff sometimes yourself?
So yeah, I don't do it myself per se. I am doing the work here, right? So, but I'll FaceTime my dad and, you know, 'cause I'm not going to call him a full out chiropractor, but after 19 years in the league of having this stuff done to him. He's picked up a lot of it, and he's learned from it, and he's learned to apply it a little bit. And so I've kind of been trying the same thing. You know, how can I learn this discipline? And how can I make this beneficial to myself? Because I saw how it worked for him. He missed, you know, in 19 seasons, he missed less than 20 games. You know what I mean? And that's unbelievable. And so I've just tried to do that. But I'll FaceTime him, and he's kind of a guy that helps me a lot, because he knows a lot more. You know, he knows a lot more muscles and whatnot, and things that, you know, it's more than just, oh, my ankle's hurt, let's work on my ankle. There's a million different muscles and things that might go into it. So he's kind of my encyclopedia. And so I'll give him a call, and we'll work through it together usually.
Interesting stuff, Mike. Has there ever been like a situation in your career, maybe an injury or something, where you actually really started to think, oh, I'm going to take care, but like better care of my body? Or was that always sort of inside you?
You know, there has never been, luckily, Dom, you know, I'll say this, luckily, I haven't had any very bad injuries. You know what I mean? I've been fortunate in that regard, and I pray that it will stay that way and that it will always be that way. But there was never one thing that made me say, oh God, I've got to change my way, or I need to, you know, take more focus on myself. It's just been little injuries here and there, you know, like a sprained ankle or, you know, a shoulder that gets, you know, it seems like your shoulder gets ripped out of your socket. It's little things that over time, you know, maybe your back acts up. Little things over time have made me not say, oh God, I take care of myself better, because I feel I do a very good job of it. But little things make you not nervous, but they draw your attention to it, to where you say, okay, I've got to be wary. But if it happens again, I know how to deal with it and know how to possibly speed up the recovery. That's kind of the goal.
Interesting. Could you also speak to the listeners a little bit of, since I was able to work with you for 2 years, just speak about your joy of dynamic warm-ups.
Oh yeah, I knew this question was coming eventually.
Sorry for interrupting you, but you like to say things like crap or double crap. Can you just
absolutely
enlarge on that?
Absolutely, that's easy. So for example, if Dom is going to come in and say, "All right, let's get let's get the bands out," or you know, let's let's do one-legged hell, even lunges, even something simple. All right, one-legged lunges, walking lunges. I'll say, oh, that's crap, double crap, you know, or trash. I think one of my old teammates, and he still plays in Göttingen, Dom Lockhart, also knows those words and how to describe your dynamic warm-ups. But
I can,
it's something that I've always fought with you about.
I know. I can assure you that I still get these comments, and it's, you know, it's always good for a laugh.
But you hate it, Dom. you really hate it, don't you? Because that's your craft, dynamic warm-up. That's like your, that's always the input of the day.
Let me say this. Before Dom could answer, let me say this. In Dom's defense, and somewhat at a detriment to what I say, I have to give Dom the ultimate respect, because this is something that he cares deeply about and he knows a lot about. It's not like he's just seeing something on YouTube and saying, oh yeah, I saw somebody say, let's do this. Dom takes his time and he researches this stuff and he knows it. And what I respect about you, Dom, now I can't believe I'm actually saying this to your face.
I'm all ears.
I just make fun of you. Usually I just make fun of you, and that's kind of what I've always liked to do.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to be honest with you for once. So you know, Coach Roy Akers, Johan, if you hear this, forgive me for being too nice to your boy Dom here. But it matters to Dom, you know, and it's important to him. Then that's good enough for me. You know what I mean? I know that he's done the research. I know he's done the work. So even though I do not like doing the dynamic warmups and a multitude of other, you know, crap that Dom tries to implement, I will do it because I know it's coming from a place of knowledge and a place of place of knowledge. So I respect the effort he puts in.
I truly appreciate your words. I'm melting here at the moment. Thanks for all the love.
That's the last time it's ever going to happen.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, definitely. That's the dynamic warm-up is or in general, I don't want to reduce Dom to dynamic warm-up because he does so much more. And it's what you said.
Trap bar deadlifts.
Trap bar deadlifts. And the one time I had to laugh, because I remember when I was still playing there, we had sometimes these recovery practices. And those consisted of, I think we always started with running around the court with like no basketball in our hands. And I think every basketballer doesn't like that, but especially Mike Stockton hates that. And those comments came with crap. And then we went to the weight room and started with CARS, controlled articular rotational movements or whatever it's called. And you basically just like, roll your foot around. And it's something I actually can't make too much fun of it because I still do it sometimes and I use it. And I got to also give Dom a lot of credit that I can still play basketball with relatively less pain. But those times were just awesome because seeing Mike's face with the disjoy, I don't know if that's an English word, amazing.
Displeasure, probably.
Displeasure.
Displeasure is the better word. Yeah.
I'm not a fan of the CARS. That's for darn sure. But again, you know, like you said, Leonard, this is something that's helped you as you've, you know, continued to play and had your injuries and things that have bothered you. And it's something that's helped you. So I can't completely dismiss it because it's, you know, kind of like the chiropractic stuff. It's another discipline. It might not be the one that I believe in necessarily or the one that I use at the moment, but you never know when it's going to come in value to me. It's clearly been valuable to other people. So I will try to be nice about it. And good for you, Dom. Thanks for making me do all those CARS the last 2 years. Dom.
It was my pleasure and my absolute pleasure. I mean, you guys just touched on the weight room, right? Like, you know, I think in regards to the weight room, you were always a guy. Once I introduced what was on the board, you just really got straight to it and did everything. And after that, you just did your stuff, which was always fine, fine for me, of course. But can you comment on the weight room? What role does it play in your career, especially during the season? Is it rather something you embrace, or is it maybe an unpleasant duty for you?
The weight room has been huge for me over the years, Dom, and it's something that I absolutely embrace without question. Mm-hmm. You know, basketball is a physical game, and you have to be ready for it. You know what I mean? There's certain things that you can't necessarily prepare for if you're just out on the court getting shots every day, or, you know what I mean? There's things that you have to be ready for, and getting in the weight room has always been something I've believed in that will help with basketball. And, you know, I always loved Dom's workouts. Dom, again, to compliment you. I wouldn't always, you know, for example, if there was trap bar deadlifts, Dom would look at me and I'd say, all right, Dom, come on now, you know, and he'd just say, okay, well, here's another option to do the same, to get the same, you know, effect and same exercise. You can do, you know, a one-legged deadlift or what's the word I'm looking for?
Two kettlebell RDL.
The kettlebell RDL right there. Shout out to the Romanian deadlift. But yeah, the weight room's been huge. I love it. You know, again, I loved your workouts, but I also loved that we had the freedom to, if there was something that you knew worked for you or something you didn't know or knew that didn't work for you, we had the freedom to go do it or not do it. And, you know, as long as guys are in there and giving that effort, and as long as, you know, our strength and conditioning coach Dom is making sure he's not hurting guys, that's the goal of the whole thing. The goal is to get guys ready to play, not to make sure they're hurt because they're trying to do, you know, reckless Olympic lifts. So anyways, Dom, nothing but compliments in that regard. You never made me do anything too stupid in there. you gave us the freedom to use things that, you know, to do things that we knew worked for us, and that's invaluable.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that, because that is just something I started doing, I think, last season with you guys, that, you know, I always think the weight room, especially in season, should be something that's also fun for the players. And that's why I was coming up with these, like, I wanted to give players more freedom in choosing things, because I thought if players can choose things, then they're probably also, yeah, gonna do it a little better, you know, as if I would probably say, hey, you gotta do this with that amount of weight, 6 reps, 4 sets, you know what I mean? And it's mm-hmm. it's actually funny that you mentioned it, because yeah, that is something that I think works pretty good, especially when you look at the lifting weights through the lens of in-season training. Mm-hmm. So nice that you said that.
I think one big thing is always
compliment you too much.
that you give players the option or the freedom of doing something additional or something else, because somehow I think, like, when somebody tells me, yeah, well, you have the freedom also to do this and this and that, it, like, it motivates me to also keep thinking in that regard and not to just go in there and wait for the coach or the trainer to tell me what to do, and I only get that done and then I'm out of there again. Like, I'm not engaged anymore, I'm not motivated to do it. And as soon as I get more freedom and I can also think about it, like, what else I want to do or something, I don't know, it embraces or it strengthens my motivation to do stuff in the weight room. Because I'll be honest, during the season, I'm not, like, I don't love to be in the weight room. I'm in there because I know it helps me, and my body won't survive without it. But it's definitely not something I enjoy too much during the season.
Yeah, and Mike, go ahead.
I'm just going to say, you guys both make a great point. Is, you know, the freedom, you know, there's guidelines, but the freedom to, you know, take ownership in this. What's the term?
Exactly.
I think it's autonomy or something.
Autonomy.
Like that.
Yeah. That's autonomy.
Yeah. And you're giving guys the freedom to, you know, to engage themselves and to find, it just is a phenomenal setup all the way around.
Yeah. And you also always have to take into consideration that, you know, if I, let's say, do, just as an example, I do trap bar deadlifts with both of you, one guy will respond completely different to it the next day. You know what I mean? And I obviously, in season, I just want players to be ready the next day and not sore because they just lifted too much weight the day before. So that's obviously also a big point.
And what do you think about this freedom? I wanted to talk to you later on, you originally in this podcast, about like relationships to coaches, but let me fast forward to that real quick. So now let's transfer it from the weight room to the basketball court. Do you think, or how much freedom do you think a player sometimes should have also in, like, yeah, general things like how long is practice, how much do we practice as a team, like talking to the head coach who decides that, and also maybe in regards of tactics or other things that you might think about, like, where is the border of freedom and then coach is the boss and he says what's up in the end?
Yeah, that's a great question, Leonard. And, you know, I had the rare insight, I guess you could say. I got to play 2 years for Johan, who, again, if people I think are listening to this know who he is, but this is Coach Johan Royakkers, and he coaches for BG Göttingen. You know, I was lucky enough to be the captain for 2 years and play for him. And I got to have, you know, a close relationship with him, let's say, because, you know, we did talk about stuff like this fairly often. And, you know, it's the funny thing with basketball, Leonard, and this is, let's just talk from a playing standpoint here at the moment. The funny thing with basketball is everyone always says, like, oh God, you know, if coach, you know, I just want freedom on the court. Everyone says, like, if coach just gave me freedom, you know, I'd be out here killing. Mm. And this isn't anybody in specific, but this is just something guys over years have said, you know, and I've said it before, but it doesn't work like that. You know what I mean? Everybody, actually, it's human nature to crave structure. You know what I mean? If everybody has complete freedom, it's not freedom at all. It's anarchy. You know what I mean? There has to be some sort of rules that drive it. And when you have those rules, that's when you can, you know, that's when you can be free to expand on that. I don't know if that makes any sense, but, you know, guys need to have a little bit of structure. Just teams need to have structure. just think if you say on defense, all right, we don't have a plan. Everybody does their own thing. You could have five phenomenal defenders on the floor and somehow it wouldn't work. You know what I mean? There has to be a plan in place. And you know, it's the same way on the offensive side of the ball too, but everything is driven by a little bit of structure. So when the coach provides that, when Johan's saying, okay, you know, here's our schedule, here's how we do things, here's our culture, it makes it easy for guys to first off assimilate into that, right? Mm-hmm. And then to second off, find their role and their way to expand on that and to expand their freedom in those in that structure. I feel like I'm talking about the Matrix right now. I'm just blabbering, but I think you understand.
I think I get what you're trying to say. And let me you were talking about offense and defense, and I said this on a podcast earlier in earlier episodes that with this tool that I use for work, I feel like I can profile players into like some players or some people in general like to just, what you said, follow rules and know what's up, and other ones just go really more with the flow and are more spontaneous also on the court, I would say. And I said that on defense, it helps to just wanting to follow rules, because on defense you need even more structure, and my hypothesis was that on offense it's a little bit different. Would you agree with that, or what's your take on that?
I definitely agree. Yeah, I definitely agree with that, Leonard. I think defense is more of a, definitely need more structure because there's more communication involved. You know what I mean? There's on offense, one guy can have the ball, the other guys can literally stand around, and the one guy can find a way to get a bucket. Whereas on defense, if one guy's guarding his face off and the other four aren't doing anything, you can't stop anybody. You know what I mean? So I definitely agree with you that there's more construction and more structure needed on the defensive end.
Okay. Yeah, very, very, very interesting. And then I guess I just keep going on this topic real quick. Do you still remember, that was basically my starting question originally, do you still remember your first youth coach, or in general youth coaches that really influenced you, basketball coaches I'm talking?
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, my I've been lucky enough to have a lot of good coaches over the years, and that's from youth all the way through, you know, high school, college, pros, great coaches all the way around. But I distinctly remember when I was a kid, my basketball coach was Pete Haristo. This is my best friend's dad. And my dad was the assistant coach, AKA the conditioning specialist, because he wasn't there every day. You know, sometimes they'd have away games and he wouldn't be there. So he was our assistant coach. And, you know, the effects that those two guys had on me and actually all of our teammates, all of my teammates at the time, was phenomenal, because, you know, we learned a lot of things. First off, we learned more so than basketball stuff. Learned how to you know, act with class, how to conduct yourselves as, even as kids, we learned this stuff. You show up on time, you have the right attitude. You know, lessons that I'll remember my entire life, I learned at that young age from Mr. Haristo and my dad, that I'll never forget.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy how big of an influence coaches have, especially in those early days on their athletes. Because sometimes I feel like youth coaches, they don't get praised enough, because like money wise and also to be talked about, because basically that's where you set up the DNA of a player, and also not only as a player but also as a person in general, because that's usually basketball or whatever sport, you know, they coach or they play, they embrace it with how do you say, enthusiasm. So they really, really want to pick up stuff when they're on the court or doing that sport. And that influence coaches have on them is crazy. Because I asked you this question about your youth coach, if you still remember, and you basically described him vividly. And I could do the same thing. So I know definitely my youth coaches had first two, three or whatever had a huge impact on me. And I think that's sometimes forgotten or not cared about too much.
It's a thankless profession, that's for sure. Like it's one of those things that, you know, you if you're doing it because you want accolades and you want to get the credit, you're in the wrong profession. You know what I mean? Especially with the youth, but you can put that imprint of the game of basketball and you know, the right way to conduct yourself life. I think it's just a, you know, they're doing saints work down there. saints work with youth basketball. The guys that put their time and their heart into it, you can't thank enough.
And let's forward then real quick through a player's career, and now he's a pro, and now he has a new coach. And what do you think of these? I don't know if this is an English word, ambivalence. Or the two spectrums of one. On the one side, you gotta like your coach, you gotta respect him, because you need to trust him. You know, you need to trust his tactics or in whatever he says, and you need to be wanting to play for him, to put your ass on the line for him. And on the other side, well, maybe this is too strong word, but you hate him because he talks sometimes, you know, stuff that you don't want to hear. And I have a guest here who wants to chip in on that. Fuck you, everybody! Fuck you, okay? You want this to be okay? Fuck you, digital dummy! Okay? Shame on you! A true coaching legend, Zaza Obradovic, and he's known for going crazy on his players. And now my big question is, where do you stand at that point? What do you like better personally? More liking the coach or more being on the, I hate him, but he pushes me the right way, basically?
You know, I think first off with the Obradovic soundbite there, that one, you know, I know he's a legend and everyone loves him in Europe, right? You know what I mean? Because he's the anti-NBA, you know what I mean? Mm. It's still a place where the coach holds a little bit of the power compared to, you know, the players holding all the power. And he's obviously a very good coach, but sometimes when it gets recklessly personal, you know, and it's that just, you know, and it's, you know, going at guys just to go at guys. I don't know if I respect that very much, but I know how to handle that. Right. So like you said, it's a delicate balance between, okay, you know, I want to respect the coach's wishes, but sometimes the coach's wishes, depending on the situation, and this is maybe what that coach's wishes were, sometimes the coach's wishes are that you all sit and band together and say, okay, screw this guy. Yeah. We've got to go out and do our jobs. It doesn't matter what he says. It doesn't matter what he's telling us to do. He wants us to have that rebellious attitude to go out and prove him wrong.
And I feel like sometimes coaches want that, huh?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, I've been in those situations before where, you know, where definitely I think it's been a plan of the coach to just, all right, eventually this team is going to be strong and come together because they, you know, either dislike the coach or want to prove the coach wrong. I've definitely seen it, and it's worked with some teams, and maybe some teams you can look at it and say, oh, that backfired. But strangely enough, it's something that has worked a fair amount of times that I've seen.
That is crazy. Dom, sorry, I'm trying to put you back in this conversation. How do you feel about this as being a strength and conditioning coach or performance coach when you give those freedoms that you said you started this now in the past year, I heard? Do you feel like you sometimes, let's say, lose respect through that because you give them freedom and players are getting lazy or whatever? Or do you feel it, like I described earlier, the opposite?
You know, I think that's a walk. Sometimes it's a walk on a razor blade, I would say, because you obviously have players on your team who don't like the raid room as much. But I think then if I'm able to get these guys and tell them, here, you have option A, B, C, I don't care what you do, but I want you to do one of these. Or if, for example, if a player comes up then with another suggestion, and that's fine for me, you know, I actually like that. And I think it's most of the time, I would say it's really positive. You know, I actually get them to do things. So
you like it when people like talk to you, discuss about certain, I don't know, exercises or something?
Yeah, exactly. Of course, I like that. And, you know, in the first episode, we talked a little bit about buy-in. I think that's also something I can get a player on my side. You know, basically it just means, hey, this guy, this coach gives me gives me choices and I can actually decide what I rather would like to do if there's something on the board that I don't like. So I think it's a win-win.
Yeah. Anybody wants to chip in on this more relationship with coaches, I would call it topic, or should I try to move on to the next one?
You know, Leonard, I think I actually can jump in there a little bit more here.
Go ahead.
I can speak more on it if you guys don't mind.
For sure. That's why we have you here. Give us your wisdom.
That's a lot of wisdom.
Now you guys are making me sound like I'm old, like AWOL, like Adam or something. Come on now.
Don't let him hear that.
Adam, real quick.
Don't let him take one quick shot. Don't let him hear that.
Yeah, I hope he's not listening to this episode.
Hey, you guys can edit that part out, Leonard. That's what you're doing back there on the keys, right? You can just bleep it out like a swear word on an American rap station.
Yeah, just give us all your wisdom, and afterwards, I see what I cut out and not.
Yeah,
good man. Yeah, I mean, I relationships with coaches are very important, though, in my opinion. And you know, at the end of the day, the thing that I think is most important is that, you know, and there's different ways to show this, and when I describe this, you'll understand. But you know, as a player, you sit here and you go, all right, I just want to know that the coach cares about me, cares about our team. You know what I mean? And it's not like it's not like when I say that cares about the team, that I don't want a coach that's going to coddle guys and to be soft and just say, oh no, that's okay. You know, but you want to know that this coach would fight for you a little bit and that, you know, he respects the work that you're doing for him, and you want that coach to reciprocate that respect in his own way. And, you know, the teams that I've been on and the coaches that I've had where this has happened, you know, you see teams buy in and you see guys, you know, start to believe in the process a little bit. And we had that in Göttingen a few times where you could see guys all of a sudden, you know, get invested a little bit more because they say, all right, you know what, coach, I believe that coach cares about me and, you know, or, you know, about this guy. You know, everyone could start to buy in because you believe you're all pushing towards the same goal. That's really the most important part. And when you have that, you know, the successes or failures, you know, it's not like you're going to win every game, but you're going to find a way to maximize what you have and to get the most out of guys. And, you know, and clearly they're doing that right now with BG. And they're having a good year, but it's stuff like that, you know, just knowing that, you know, the energy is the same and it's reciprocating.
Yeah. And it's crazy that you got to do that every year again, basically, since always players are changing, teams are changing, and it's always a restart basically in Europe, because teams never stay together and coaches are like fired and replaced so quickly.
Yeah, it's very difficult, Leonard, to build a culture in Europe. You know what I mean? For example, if you go to Bayern Munich or to Alba Berlin, they have a culture, right? Because they, you know, the brand speaks for itself a little bit. And, you know, I have to give Johan a ton of credit actually for in BG, because this program has an identity, right? It has a face to it. It has an identity and something that you can build on. All right, this is the culture we, you know, this is the kind of players we want. This is the kind of attitudes we want. And this is the kind of basketball we want to play, right? It's not easy to have that, because like you said, there is no continuity. Players come and go, coaches come and go. But if there's any bit of consistency, you can start to build on something. And luckily in Göttingen, there is consistency. You know, the management, you know, Frank and Mark Eric, and that's been a constant the whole time. Now, players have come and gone, right? You know, some guys have played 2 years, some guys have played three, some have played one. But at least there is something to build upon coming back every year. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, is unbelievably underrated when you look at teams over in Europe and building teams, is that culture that, you know, stands from the year before. You have to realize it's a new year, obviously, but you have to build on your culture.
That's a really, really good point, I think. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And Mike, since you mentioned Frank Meinerzagen, that's our general manager for the listeners, he told me today that he wanted me at least to say hi to you. You know,
Hey man, that's Frank, my guy. You know, he's been nothing. He's been great to me for my 2 years that I played there. And, you know, I consider Frank a good friend and a good human being, actually. Not to get too mushy here, Frank, I'm sorry, but that's just a quality guy right there, and he runs a quality organization.
Leonard, do you want to change something, or because I could actually also come up with a question here?
Go ahead. I've been talking.
So Mike, you know, since we were just talking about relationships, and you mentioned our former guest, you call him old Adam Waliszkowski. What about your relationship to him? What kind of a guy is he on a like as a teammate? I think you can talk about that, right?
Absolutely. You know, I'll go back to the beginning here a little bit for Adam and I. In 2012 and 2013 was the first time I met Adam. We played against each other in the Pro A in the second league in Germany. He was playing for the Gloria Giants Dusseldorf at the time, and I was playing for BG Karlsruhe. And they were a good team. We were a good team, and we battled it out. And clearly, Adam is a guy similar to me that obviously, if we're not on the same team, we're going to dislike each other. And so, you know, Adam was a guy that I respected, but I thought he was dirty. And you know, my list of insults probably could go on and on at the time. But then a couple months later, I signed a play in Ludwigsburg, and he's on the team. And I go, oh boy, this guy from Dusseldorf. So I was I was curious to see how it would go. And then, you know, just after 5 minutes of knowing the guy, this guy is instantly, you're sitting here going, God, I feel like I've known this guy forever. This guy's been my best friend for 6 years already, you know? So Adam was just still one of my favorite teammates. A guy I keep in touch with to this day. And, you know, him and I just miss playing with Adam, man. I had 2 good years there in Ludwigsburg with him, and it was hell playing against him even afterwards when I was in Göttingen and he was in Ludwigsburg. Adam and I always had a pretty good inside joke, you know, stack of inside jokes, and he would say those during the games that we'd be playing against each other.
Good trash talk.
And absolutely. And it would definitely get me to smile or to chuckle. And I distinctly remember, so one thing that Adam and I always would, I'll let you in on one of our inside jokes, and it's not very inside, but in Ludwigsburg, whenever somebody would get like a wide open layup opportunity, you know, a guy would be naked, right? A back cut or whatever. Somebody would yell, "He blew it! He missed it!" Something like that. And, you know, if you didn't say anything, the guy's going to make the layup. But just you saying that, guys somehow just, their focus gets crumbled and they'll miss the layup. And so we would always do that in practice. Or if I missed a layup in practice that was open, Adam would start screaming, "He blew it!" And so we're playing a couple years ago, 2 years ago in Ludwigsburg. And I back cut, I'm wide open. And I think Breon Rush, another former teammate of mine who I'm sure we'll talk about later, hits me with a beautiful back cut, backdoor pass. And I go up for the layup. There's no one within 2 meters of me, guys. And Adam yells, "He blew it!" And I smoked it. I missed the layup and I couldn't believe it. And I didn't laugh on the way back down, but I sure as hell know he was laughing.
I mean, that's it's an amazing story, and I mean, I wish we could ask Adam now, but you know, we weren't brain drops. You know, I think we can make the impossible possible. So I would really like to ask Adam now if there is like mutual joy when he talks about Mike.
Yeah, of course.
Hey, Adam, good to see
Mike,
you.
Mike, how's it going, my man? Dom set you up on that one. Good thing you didn't say anything too mean about me, you know, or too dirty. Just that little low blow about being the old man, the old wise man.
Hey, you know, somebody's got to take that role, big fella.
That's hilarious. Yeah, no, I was giggling at it. Also, yes, that was an absolute hilarious story. And you can ask Dom. I was looking at him before you even started telling the story. I was saying, he blew it. Because that was one of the funnier things that happened in my career, too. You know, you always play against guys and you're talking to them on the court. But we had that inside joke going and completely did the exactly how it went. You know, he just blew, smoked the wide open layup. I was giggling hard. I I was trying to hold it together here while you were telling me that story because I didn't want to laugh too hard.
Yeah, he was really trying to keep it together, but he did. It was, Adam. I mean, since you're here now, I think you can also ask Mike some questions, right?
Yeah. No, it was funny because you know I piggybacking on. I've had a lot of people in my career have the same type of thing going. Or, you know, Mike played with Dennis Kramer last year, and on the last episode we talked about. I think we talked a little bit about that. I had that same kind of atmosphere or feeling about Dennis. I always hated playing against him, and then now that I'm on the team with him, it's like, you know, he's become one of my good buddies, and I don't have those problems. Or I love watching him do the things that he would do against me as an opponent. He does them to the other people now. So that's one of those things for sure. I agree with you on that one.
Dennis was, I'll say this quickly about Dennis Kramer, as I like to call him in his German name. Whenever coach would announce the teams before practice, all right, White, Mike, you know, Dom, I'm just sitting there praying to God that he says White, Dennis, because I don't want to just take the knee into the middle of my thigh on one of his phenomenally illegal moving screens.
I remember those screens for sure on practice, even though I was just a practice guy, Dom.
Even though, Adam didn't hear that in the beginning, you know, because I was about to say that already last episode. I just made clear that Leonard was only a practice player.
Just make sure everybody knows in the podcast that he made it to the practice player level.
But that brings me to my little other theme I wanted to talk to you guys about. And that's basically we talked about the relationships of coach and player. But what about the relationship of players? And that's we always, last time we talked, Dom asked Adam this question about being a veteran, and now I want to talk a little bit more maybe about the so-called glue guy, what those people do and how they keep up the atmosphere on the team and what actually makes them so important, like maximizing the potential when you have a good relationship with your coach, but even more you maximize the potential of a team when the relationship between the players or in the team is great. Maybe, I don't know who wants to start, but Mike or Adam, go ahead and do something with this question.
Mike, go ahead. It's your podcast, buddy. I'll follow it up.
Oh, wow. You're making me blush over here. yeah, Leonard, like you said, you know, I believe that the best teams, you know what I mean, is when the players are leading it, right? When the players trust each other enough to be able to hold each other accountable. You know what I mean? You don't have to wait for coach to say that wasn't good enough or we did this wrong. You want to be able to have teammates that can say that to each other. And, you know, you build that relationship from day one.
And you want to have teammates that are willing to accept that too. You know, a lot of guys.
Absolutely.
You get out there and get to talking, and since it's not the coach or somebody, one of the other players will say something to them. They won't be taking that as seriously when the other coach, you know. So I think part of that player relationship that he's talking about too is being able to give and receive criticism and not take it in a negative way, but learn from just listen to what guys are trying to say and not how they're saying it sometimes as well.
And how do you guys, I know Mike, since I played with you, you're like one of the social guys for sure. Like you also try to bond off the court really, really well. And I think that's something you always try to do or did try already back in Göttingen when you were the captain to try to bond the team. What's something you always do with teams?
All right. Well, I'll give you a little story from our time in Göttingen. Nothing crazy here, eh? Well, I'll keep it PG. But but like you said, I like to get guys. You know, I like to get teammates away from the basketball gym a little bit. You know what I mean? I want, you know, you want to get to know guys separate from just on a basketball court. You know what I mean? And yeah, I try to build those relationships and that trust off the court as well. And one of my favorite things to do is, you know, if we'd have an early evening practice, I'd try to get a bunch of guys to go out Wednesday night, for example. I'd try to get a bunch of guys to go out to this restaurant called Zum Zoltenburger to go get schnitzels, man, and maybe have a brewski. I don't know, but I just thought it was fun to go out, do something extremely German, and, you know, get the German guys, get the American guys, you know, out there and socializing and talking about something other than, you know, how good or bad we played in practice or the last game. And I've always felt that that's been a good way for guys to get their minds off the game a little bit and to just relax and just to kind of step away for a minute.
Yeah, for sure. It's one of those things you have to do. And I think, like, you know, last week we talked about being a veteran player, but also one of those things as an older player is trying to get guys to socialize outside of the basketball court and form more, you know, personal relationships rather than just the 12 guys that I play with or the other 11 guys that I play basketball with. So yeah, we always had some good times. I remember we used to go bowling a lot back in the Ludwigsburg days, you know, us, the Brockmans and Cody and all that. And it was funny, piggybacking, I wanted to ask you about, you know, I sent Mike a couple of audio clips today, and I sent it to you here, Dom. It was back in the day when we would take our bus trips in Ludwigsburg, we would always play, you know, the card game Spades. And I'm sure a lot of the American listeners, U.S. listeners know what we're talking about, but for the just a, you know, a card game where you use the whole deck and you have to bid on how many books you think you're going to get and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, we would play for, God, what, hours at a time on our road trips. I remember a couple we would play.
The whole trip.
Yeah, the whole trip. But it was such a great time, and we had such a good social interaction with our team, and we got along with each other. We were forced to have that, like, communication while we were playing cards, and it was a lot of fun. So I was how funny was it when I sent you that audio clip of you 6 years ago, yeah, interviewing Gary McGee after the Spades game, man. Yeah? And I told Leonard.
I was dying.
Yeah. And I think I should tell you, I wanted to give Leonard a copy of that so maybe he could possibly put it on here for some of the people to hear us back in the day, because it was a kind of an interesting or a hilarious interview.
I can try to do that later on, maybe.
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely. Link that in there. I was dying when you sent it to me, though. And you said in the last podcast episode, you said, yeah, sometimes I just like to record random conversations and listen to them years. I was just laughing instantly thinking of the multiple Spades games interviews we had. So I'm glad you still have those.
Do you guys all right, so do you guys still play Spades at all on your team trips?
Oh yeah, Adam. So this year I've got a crew of three other Americans that we've been playing a lot, and you know, we don't do the interviews afterwards, but yeah. I think that's something I got to try and get, because we've played, you know, this is cards, Adam. So there's a fair amount of luck involved. but we've cards. Had some good hands and some bad hands. Let's say that the last three games we played, we got Boston on the opening hand to lose the game, which means you lost three straight hands. So. Yeah. My Spades career is not, it's in a valley right now. It's not at its best.
That's kind of crazy because we haven't gotten to play Spades that much the last couple years. You can never get enough people that either one know how to play or two want to play together, you know. I think with having Netflix and iPads and phones and everything and Wi-Fi on the bus now, everybody's busy doing their own thing and watching videos or reading books or listening to music on their own thing that we don't sit and talk anymore, but just sit around and play cards at all.
Do you think let's say these times right now with social media, with Netflix and everything, do you think that makes it harder for a team to bond, or is it also, I mean, they're more connected now immediately through all that stuff. Is it easier, or what's your take on that being both, I think, a little bit, let's say, old school with that?
Yeah.
You know, I think it's social media can be good and bad in that regard, right? I think, you know, it can promote isolation a little bit, you know what I mean? Because, oh yeah, I can just, you know, talk to my teammates from here or send them a Snapchat instead of actually meeting somebody at a restaurant. You can just say what you need to say, you know, in a video or a post or something. But at the same time, it's a great way to keep in touch with guys, you know what I mean? But I just wish that there would be a little bit more face-to-face stuff. But again, you know, as technology gets better, it's tough to ask that of guys, you know, because everyone's so it's in people's DNA to use these things.
Yeah, well, to piggyback, I think it's just programming. They're programming cell phones and all these different apps to be so addicting. Just the, you know, the motion of scrolling through Instagram or scrolling through Facebook or something, they've shown to be an addicting, you know, that's what keeps people there. And Man, it's crazy when you get on the bus before a trip or something, or how fast guys will get on their, or constantly on their phones, or you'll look around the locker room, you know, after practice, and you'll have 7 of the 12 guys or 10 of the 12 guys will be on their cell phone immediately after practice. It's like, what's so important? You got to get on, you know, get on your cell phone right after practice.
And the thing is, instead of talking to each other or instead of playing spades on the bus. And that's why I'm trying to weigh in here on this, because it takes time away, like face to face, like Mike said.
Yeah. And I think too, it wasn't Mike and I here, but, when I was in Ludwigsburg, I think it was the 16-17 I was here. So the 17-18 season, we had a pretty successful year. You know, we went to the Final Four of the Champions League and I think finished third in the league with Ludwigsburg. We had in the back of the bus, Karan Johnson and Tom Walkup and I had a rule that we couldn't get on our iPhones or our iPads for the first 30 minutes of the bus trip. At least we had to sit and have a conversation with each other and just talk about stuff, because, you know, it's just natural behavior to immediately get on your phone and get lost in doing something, playing a game, or, you know, have an app open, or texting somebody, or looking at pictures on Instagram. So
do you think that would be something, let's say a coach hears this podcast and he says, oh, that's a great idea, I'm gonna make my guys get off the phone every 30 minutes of the bus ride, the first 30 minutes, and like just tell them to do it. They didn't do it within, but they just got told. Do you think it would have a positive effect on them, or is it immediately like gone?
No, absolutely not. When it comes from an authoritative figure, it has no chance at all of surviving. If it comes from like a team or like a group is like, hey, we need to talk more, communicate more, we should do this. I think personally, from my experiences, any coach that has ever tried to do that, it just backfires. Now it's just guys trying to find ways to hide looking at their phone when the coach is looking at them or something, you know, so along those lines. Tell me if I'm wrong, Mike.
Hey, no, you're absolutely correct. Leonard, I'll say it like this. So I'm one of those guys that doesn't have my phone out for the most part anyways. You know what I mean? But if a coach were to say, all right, guys, no phones for the first 30 minutes or you're getting fined. Well, then to hell with that. I'm getting my phone out. You know what I mean? I'm not going to put up with that. Every one of us, or at least I am,
these
I can
rules
be a petty, petty little child at times. This aggression will not stand, man.
We'll keep the movie quotes to a minimum for this podcast. Me and Mike might start.
We'll try.
We'll start quoting off the whole Big Lebowski movie to you guys.
Absolutely.
Oh, man.
Adam, did you? Dom told me you had also some questions for Mike Reddy here.
Yeah, well, I kind of touched on one of my talking about spades and if they still played spades when they go on trips. But what else? And you know, we got into talking about what you do on road trips. That was kind of one of my questions. The only one I wanted to ask you about. You know, last year your brother David was in Bayreuth. But, you know, somehow in the two games, you guys didn't get to link up and play against each other. Did you guys get to visit each other a decent amount or go hang out? Because I remember when my brother was playing overseas, he was in Spain. I went to visit him a couple times when he was in Spain. I never got to visit him in Italy. But, you know, having a family member over here was always a cool thing to travel and go see them. So I was talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, man, that was actually. It was unfortunate we didn't get to play against each other, you know, for strange reasons on both ends, but it was probably for the best. Let's be honest. You know, neither of us wanted to be suspended by the league for fighting. And
I'm sure the BBL would have loved the ratings. The BBL would have loved the ratings in that game.
Hey, just the Happy Gilmore. But I mean, that kind of stuff sells. It would have been a big time game. But, you know, So he was in Bayreuth, and I actually got to see David and his family a couple times. He was there with his wife, Annalie, and his two kids, James and Mia, and they're, you know, 4 years old and 2 years old at the time. Yeah. So they weren't exactly very mobile. You know, it's not like they could come visit me in Göttingen. But I was able to get down to Bayreuth a couple times, actually, and we met up in a few different places. Once, I think, in Wartburg in Germany, kind of a place in between Göttingen and Bayreuth. And then for one of the FIBA breaks, we met in Florence, Italy, and just had a great time for three or 4 days. So it was an absolute blessing, actually, to have them over there, to just have someone, you know, some people that you care about so close by. It was so much fun.
Yeah, right. And especially, like, you know, you grew up with your brother and being on the other side of the world with him, kind of experience, you know, being in Florence, I'm sure it was a great time. But you know, when I went to visit my brother in Spain, got to hang out with his kids and play with them and experience the Spanish culture, because he was in Alicante at the time. And it was, I mean, you know, that's a vacation destination. It's a great place. So. That was a lot of fun for me.
Maybe adding to that question, Mike, there's something I wanted to ask you about, but I don't know if I can phrase it right. So for listeners, of course, they should have picked up by now, your dad is John Stockton, Hall of Famer, great NBA player. And of course, I mean, always you look up to your dad. I look up to my dad and whatever, but you choose the craft, basically. He, I don't know, some would say mastered or whatever, and you still chose it and played and embraced it and had a like great career still, or are still having it. But did you ever, like, was it ever weird to you, or did you feel pressure having like such a great basketball player as a dad, or was it just always constantly like turning you on to compete? Or maybe you could talk about that a little bit.
Absolutely. You know, I never felt the pressure of having to follow in my dad's footsteps, or I never felt that I had to play this game or that he wanted me to play this game. You know, and that was kind of the fun thing. You know what I mean? He, you know, I know he loved watching us compete, whatever sports we played, but he never put any pressure on us in that regard. And that was, you know, a great effort on his part, and I'm glad he didn't. And, you know, we just kind of came to, I mean, heck, half of my family has played professional basketball at this point.
Crazy.
And it's just something that kind of happened organically. It's not like, you know, him and my mom were forcing basketballs into our hands as little kids. It's just something, you know, we're all fairly athletic people, and we just gravitated towards it. Even amongst playing multiple other sports, basketball just kind of won out at the end of the day. So maybe it's in the blood. But yeah, man, he definitely mastered the craft, like you said. And I, you know, I'm just trying to make my own way and to do as good as I can. The only time I've ever actually, this is kind of a funny story. The only time I ever felt like I was, you know, pressure isn't the right word, but when I went to college, you know, my dad played for the Utah Jazz in Salt Lake City. And then when he retired, we moved back to Spokane, Washington, where he's from. Well, 4 years later, I go to college back in Salt Lake City, Utah. And I distinctly remember the first game we played, there was a bunch of kids that I had known from the old days, like from when I lived in Salt Lake as a kid. And I didn't even play as a freshman, Leonard. And these kids were sitting right behind the bench just crap-talking me, like just dogging me out for, oh, Stockton's son is back and he's a bum. And I was like, for the love of God, do you guys have nothing better to do?
Exactly. That's more what I meant. Like, of course, not pressure from your dad. Like, I didn't expect that anyway, because I got to meet him and your mom, and they're great, great guys for sure. But more like pressure from the outside, just carrying that name.
I got you. Sorry, I went the wrong direction there.
Totally fine.
Not at all, actually. Yeah. I mean, obviously people, I've heard a lot of things, you know what I mean? Oh, you're not your dad. You're not this, you're not that. And I sit here and I've never been beat up about it, because, you know, when someone says you're not as good as your dad, I sit there and I laugh and I say, there's not another guy that's played point guard, arguably, other than maybe Magic Johnson that could say that, you know what I mean? This is in my opinion, one of the greatest basketball players of all time. And if I'm not as good as him, well, damn it. That makes me part of the 99.9% other people that play this game at a high level that aren't that good. So, you know, I've always been okay with that.
All right, that's a great answer, I would say.
It's just funny the perspective that you took from the question, how Leonard asked it, and where you went with it to where, you know.
Maybe I'm just seeing myself as a dad someday.
It's just, you know, you don't think about it in that, you know, everybody sees you as Mike Stockton, John's son. And, you know, you don't see yourself as that all the time. You don't walk around saying like, hey, I'm John's son or something. You know, you've lived it. You've had that name your whole life. So you come to terms with it, where a lot of people would just be like, oh, your dad's famous. Why don't you tell everybody? You know, because they've never.
Why don't you tell me about it?
Yeah, right.
Well, Adam, I do, and Leonard and Dom, you know, I know you're back there still, Dom.
I'm still
there's
here.
There's one specific thing though that actually like once made me didn't make me like I felt bad. One time in my career, I was playing in Russia, and I had had a couple bad games in a row, and then we lost a game we shouldn't have lost to. So, you know, I'm not overly on the social media or anything like that, but one day I go onto my regular email, like my Hotmail at the time. And I have a message in there. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't even want to get into that. But on my Hotmail, I have a message from somebody that I don't know. And it's not in spam. It's not like in junk mail. It's legit in my inbox. I'm like, all right, whatever. And it's a Russian name. So I'm like, oh, maybe this is like, you know, the owner or somebody's. And it just said this. The apple has fallen very far from the tree. And I remember like, I remember seeing that and just being like, oh God, like, damn it. You know, I suck. Like that's all I could think of for like 20 minutes. I was like, dude, how did this guy get to me first off? And second off, I mean, he couldn't have said it any better. And not to mention, I had been trash. I was ass for like the last four games.
You were ass.
It's just hilarious that a Russian would have a saying like that. The apple has fallen very far from the tree.
Google Translate must have been working overtime for that.
Right.
That is.
Hey, that's a great story. I was going to ask you, you know, you were talking about inside stories. I call you Sarkson every so often, and I would love to hear you tell the story about how you got the nickname Sarkson.
Oh, yeah. Hey, I'd be happy to tell this one. This one still makes me laugh a little bit. I think I might still even have the paper, and I'll describe that in a minute. But so one day I was hungry, and this is when we're living in Ludwigsburg. I'm living right in the middle of the city, and oh, I know what it was for. Sean Huff and I, another old teammate of mine, who was also on our team in Ludwigsburg, another one of my great friends over the years of playing this game. But we would always watch football on Sundays. You know, his wife and kids would go to bed. He'd come over and we'd watch the late American football games. And so I'm like, oh God, I'm hungry, man. I have nothing to eat in the house. And Sean's like, well, let's call and order a pizza. I said, all right. So I get on my little burner phone because at the time I didn't have an iPhone or anything, you know.
Because you were cheap.
Yeah, exactly. I bought this thing for 15 euros and it made it work for my first 4 years of my career. And so I call and I'm trying to have a conversation with this guy in German, which actually went pretty smoothly. I order the pizza. I tell him the address, exact Marstallstrasse 4, and exactly where this pizza's got to go. And he goes, all right, you know, what's your name? And I go, Stockton. He goes, Sarkson? I said, no, Stockton. Sarkson, okay. Sarkson, I was glad. And he hangs up. And I'm going, oh, for the love of God. And I'm like yelling. And it happened more than twice. He kept repeating it. I'm like yelling in the phone, Stockton. And so Sean and I are up there watching the game. We're like, what is going on, man? Where is this pizza? And my phone rings. And I answer it. And the guy, and I'm like, you know, hello? And the guy's out there like, yo, your name is not on here. Where is Sarkson? And I'm like, oh, for the love of God. I'm like, I'll be downstairs in a minute. I go downstairs. I pick up this pizza. And mind you, downstairs from this apartment was I had to walk up 12 flights of stairs. I was on the sixth floor of this building.
Oh, God, that part. That was terrible. And, those stairs were terrible.
Those stairs were awful. And I walk all the way back up there because I get down there. And he's like pointing at the bells, you know, the ringers. He's like, where is it? And I go, what name do you have? I'm like, it's right there. And like, I point to him, Stockton, on the thing. And he goes, oh, Stockton. And shows me the receipt. And my name is spelled like a Turkish guy. It's S-A-R-C-C-K-E-N, Sarkson. S-E-R-K-C-A-N, Sarkson. And I couldn't believe it. So I brought it to practice the next day, and then Adam's been calling me Sarkson ever since.
And you forever got the nickname Sarkson.
Yep.
Should we call this episode this? Sarkson? Brain drops with Sarkson.
Michael Sarkson.
Michael Sarkson.
Michael Sarkson.
Or Miguel Sarkson.
Michael Sarkson.
Miguel Sarkson.
Or Dirty Mike. I'm with any of them.
Dirty Mike Sarkson. Dirty Mike Sarkson. No, it's gonna be. It's got to be. It's got to be the. It's got to be Dirty Mike and the boys.
Dirty, like absolutely.
Dom, Adam, and Leonard. Dirty Mike and the boys.
Dirty Mike and the boys. There it is. I think we got a winner.
Somehow we got to get Stockton in there just for the clickbaiting, you know.
Yeah, of course. Well, you can tag his name and all that stuff.
I'm just
at kidding. The end. Put it in parentheses. Put it in parentheses all the way at the end or right. at the beginning.
You know, I'll say this. You guys are having me on this podcast for the same reason a lot of teams have signed me over the years. They just want to use the name and hope my dad shows up at some point. So I'm used to this, wow. guys. Don't worry. You can use me for clickbait.
Yeah. John Stockton's son was on our show.
Yeah. There it is.
No, I think it was a great episode. Thanks, Mike, for coming out for sure. And also Adam for coming out again.
Again.
Got nothing else going on these times, so
lockdown, baby.
Hey, Mike.
Other than our mandatory workouts,
there's one more thing. One more thing I would like to ask you. Adam started it last episode, and I actually really liked it. What is your nomination?
Oh man, well, you know, I had a few that I thought were going to be good, and since I know Johan will not come on the podcast, I won't do that to you guys. But my nomination is a guy that you might consider a BG legend. He's played there a few different times, and he's honestly, in my opinion, one of the faces of the modern day BG franchise. And my nomination is Harper Camp.
Hey,
yeah, Harper.
Yeah, that'll be a good one. We'll have to shout him out.
I think Harps would be the perfect guest, man. He's a lot like Adam. You know what I mean? He's a well-read guy that knows that just I just think he could have
stories.
Great stories and yep. great things to talk about. I think he's a perfect guest.
I think it's a very good nomination. Hereby, officially, Harper Camp, you're invited. Let's meet up and make this happen.
All right, Mike. I got one last question before you stop.
Yeah, you go ahead.
Mike, who do you think's a better strength and conditioning person, one, and just all around character person, two, Domseps or Benny Pantores from Pittsburgh?
That is so bad. No.
That is a tight.
Because you were talking Domseps up, and you forgot about my guy Benny.
Damn it, man! That's a tough question because Benny Pantudis, the Greek god himself, is an absolute legend. You know what, Dom or Adam? That's a tough one to answer because I love Benny too. Yeah. I love Benny and I love Dom.
They're one and the same person.
They are. Let me say one thing though, and Dom, I never gave you this much crap because we never did Turkish get-ups with you.
True.
So Benny, if Benny ever hears this, I have to say this. So I've seen Russians in the weight room doing Russian twists. I've seen Romanians in the weight room doing Romanian deadlifts. I've seen Bulgarians doing Bulgarian squats. Shout out to Biscuits. Am I right, Adam?
Yeah, of course.
Biscuits.
But I have never seen a Turkish guy ever doing a Turkish getup. Now, let me tell you why this is important now and relevant. I play for a Turkish coach here in France named Urman Kunter, and I have a Turkish teammate named Ilkan Karaman. And I've asked them both. I said, all right, guys, I need to ask you right up, straight up, right now, do you know what a Turkish get-up is? And they both looked at me as if I just spoke Chinese to them. It was something so foreign to them, and then I showed it to them, and they laughed, and they're like, no, never, that's crap. And so anyways, Benny, if you ever hear this, Turkish get-ups, complete myth, double crap, they should be out of there. But I love you, man. I miss you.
Yeah.
Great one.
Me too, Benny. It's been a while since we talked, so if you do hear this. We got to connect again. Get some coffee at the Bowls Cafe.
All right, folks. Thanks a lot for coming out. I'm going to just wrap this up because I got to edit this afterwards. Yeah. Also, this can't be too long. I'm just kidding. Great episode. Really, thanks for coming out. And any last words, I'm out.
Yeah, no.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on, man. This was fun. Adam, as always, a pleasure.
Yeah, brother.
We'll have to get a commemorative spades tourney together one of these years. Man. We'll figure it out.
I got to send you some more of those clips, too, because I got a whole bunch of them. I'm going to send you the one where you're pissed. I'm going to let Dom listen to them right now, and then I'm going to send you a couple of them where you're just ranting, pissed off. They're hilarious. Hey,
send them on, man. They are quality. Those
you'll
were good times, man.
And Leonard.
Yes.
I have to say sorry. You were a real player back then.
Thank you so much. All right, guys. See ya. Bye-bye.
Hey, right, Leonard, you can't cut it off. 30 seconds, 30 seconds. I have to describe Leonard real quickly so people don't just think he's a practice scrub. Okay, this guy can play. First off, in 2-on-1 fast break drills, this guy was the king of the saucy filet, okay? Come in there picturesque. Now, some days it would get smacked like a volleyball out of bounds, but some days he would go up and finish it.
Thursdays, and I don't know why.
Warm-ups,
Thursdays.
Yeah, Thursday mornings were rough for Stekman. Not sure why.
Okay, yeah.
Pre-game warm-ups, I remember telling Leonard, all right, dude, you're not going to play most likely because we're not going to blow anybody out. You got to be showing out in the warm-up lines for the chicks in the crowd. And so him and Leonard, or Lenny, would always, another teammate of ours, would always go do a little pump in the weight room beforehand. They'd come back into the locker room and I'd say, Stekman, let me see the calves. Did you get some calf work in? Because the calves got to be looking good too for the ladies. So calves got to be ready and the dunks got to be mighty.
Oh my God, Mike, this doesn't make it any better.
And so I made sure Leonard was doing those things. And what do you know? Now he's got a girlfriend. So I'm not taking credit for it, but he was listening to what I was saying, obviously showing out in the warm-up lines.
Just passing on that wingman tradition.
I might cut this out. I don't know. I'm just kidding. Thanks a lot, Mike.
Fair enough. Yeah. Sorry, man.
All good. So I'm going to try again. Any last words from anybody?
I'm out, man. That's all I got.
Peace.
Always a pleasure.
See you guys. Bye-bye.
Pleasure was mine. Cheers.
Ciao.
Ciao.